I am so sick of the media dictating the terms of the narrative in this country. I'm so sick of having to be apologetic for who I am. I'm so sick of people in middle America being called flyover country or slope-headed.
Conservative teabaggers.
And it's going to be teabagging day.
It's hard to talk when you're teabagging. Appreciate it very much.
It's so funny because the teabaggers, the one thing they hate is when you call them racist.
If racism is not the whole of the Tea Party, it is in its heart.
The hatred that Timothy McVeigh, that he had. There are plenty of people like that right now.
Lots of.
I think you get the general tenor of this. It's anti-government, since this is highly promoted by the right-wing conservative networks, Fox.
The left pits people against each other. Divide and conquer is the strategy. I don't want to live in that world. It is the exact opposite of E Pluribus Unum. And what the left has stood for with political correctness is to try and get those with whom they disagree to shut up. And the Tea Party movement and Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann and Alan West and all the people that have gone out there against the mainstream media and said, you're going to call us racist? You're going to call us potential Timothy McVeighs? Fuck you. War.
Good morning. Good morning and welcome to Road Warrior Radio. You're tuned in live this Tuesday. It's Tuesday, right? Tuesday, March 12th, 2024 on the one and only Republic Broadcasting Network. And as always, thanks for coming along for the ride. It is a wild and dystopic ride here on Republic Broadcasting Network, where seldom is heard a discouraging word and the skies are not cloudy all day. Okay, maybe. It was a little discouraging from time to time. Is it better to know or to not to know? Is it, is it ignorance or apathy? We don't know and we don't care. Or so it seems sometimes. Things are interesting. Speaking of interesting, that guy that we play on this broadcast for a while now to intro the first hour, Andrew Breitbart, he is no longer with us. He was no longer with us less than a month after he gave his 2012 CPAC address, where he talked about vetting Barack Obama, talked about spending time with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn in their salon. You know, I defy anyone to listen to anything that he said. He was one of those guys who was so good at what he did that he was like those who are amazing. The extremely talented folks. I mean, he boasted about co-creating Huffington Post. He was around before Matt Drudge. He had his hands in some things and helped do some things. He had a knack for understanding some things and figuring some things out. He was one of the creative folks. Sort of reminds me of Aaron Russo. You know, probably figured out too much at some point and said, hey, wait a second, I'm putting two and two together and something doesn't add up. So I defy anyone to listen to the stuff that Andrew Breitbart did, any of the talks that he gave, you know, the interviews with Peter Robinson over at the Hoover Institution's Uncommon Knowledge deal, for example, or the Heritage Foundation talk that he did, talking about his book. And if you pay attention, he says David Mamet's book is the one that you should really get. And that's interesting. David Mamet's been around a little bit. The Secret Knowledge on the Dismantling of American Culture. That's the book that he said everyone should be reading. And David Mamet, you know, there are lots of interesting, you start kind of like going off in these little tangents and things. It's interesting the relationships that you'll find. So David Mamet wrote the screenplay for Hannibal, the sequel to The Silence of the Lambs, 10 years later. Silence of the Lambs was 1991. Hannibal was 2001. This is the one, this is the film with the scene that I talk about from time to time. And I think this movie, like so many others, I think the vampire movies and novels are a good example of this. It's more about, you know, telling a story out in plain sight, something that's happening in plain sight. There's a group, there's a cast of folks who fancy themselves apex super predators. And they're so much, I mean, they're not encumbered by conscience at all. They have no moral reservations. And so, as such, they sort of view their fellow man as not fellow men, but, you know, a resource or something to subjugate, to take advantage of, something to prey upon, something for entertainment, but not an equal. And, you know, if you watch the movie, you certainly, I think that's one of the most frightening takeaways from Anthony Hopkins' performance. The vampire movies, if you watch any of the Wesley Snipes stuff in particular, you know, these creatures that walk among the mere mortals and fancy themselves different, that kind of thing. So anyway, Andrew Breitbart mentioned David Mamet's book. And anytime you listen to anything that Andrew Breitbart said, he was so good at what he did. So much information just falling out of his mouth. He made it look easy, made it sound easy, I think. Like the greats, you know, you watch Tiger Woods hit a golf shot and you think, I could do that. No, you couldn't do that. No. A guy who shot, you know, who was shooting par golf while he was still, you know, early on in grade school, a guy who shot his first hole-in-one at age 8, and it was a real hole-in-one. It wasn't like a putt-putt hole-in-one. He makes it look easy. And I think if you listen and you take notes, and I would challenge anyone to do this. You, if you're listening casually to what Andrew Breitbart was saying, it's easy for the things to just sort of go in and out, in and out, in and out. Next person, next, you know, whatever it is, whatever bit of information he's talking about. If you take notes, you'll see that you stack up bits of information very quickly, and it's massive. And you can go back 10 years later, now 12 years later, for example, after his CPAC address, and you'll find that the bits are still relative. And what I find provocative, what to me works like the Streisand effect, at least in my mind, is he did some interesting things. And like so many folks, you know, he's no longer with us. He said something that was really going to shake the machine down and would have had probably dramatic, lasting ripple effect consequences. We have the video from Barack Obama's college days. We're going to show you. So the intro to the documentary is what we play on this broadcast. He is no longer with us. He was gone less than a month after he said those things, the 2012 CPAC. And so many of the folks related to his efforts are still around. You know, the 2012 CPAC, he thanked Tucker Carlson for getting him into this Super Bowl party with Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, terrorists who are the silver ponytail that he talked about. Pretty crazy. Can you imagine if you were a convicted terrorist, you were public enemy number one to the FBI, and then suddenly you have a career, a tenured position in academia? Is that, do you think that's possible? So they're still around. Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn are still around. Tucker Carlson is still around. Steve Bannon is still around. James O'Keefe is still around. You know, and again, Andrew Breitbart seemed goofy to a lot of people, I think, and so people didn't take him seriously, but that was, you know, that was art of war stuff because his standards were impeccable. Which is why you know, the Anthony Weiner stuff, the Podesta stuff, the Acorn stuff, in fact, speaking of John Podesta, I think that wasn't that the last tweet in his Twitter account, Andrew Breitbart? So kind of the last straw, putting all the pieces together. And lo and behold, I think that's probably where he was at or headed. And somebody knew it. You know, the gang's all here. And who's part of the gang is not who you would suspect. I thought you guys were good guys. Anyway, we'll probably play some of that stuff later on as we continue on this year, but I would defy anyone to listen to Andrew Breitbart and not find it very eye-opening 12, 15 years later. So, for whatever it's worth, it's always interesting to me. That guy's gone. You know, the tip of the spear is gone, but then you have all of these peripheral figures. Tucker Carlson, Steve Bannon, James O'Keefe in particular. These guys are still around. And there's a lot of talk, but isn't it interesting, for all the talk that we hear about certain things or certain people, nothing ever happens as a result of this talk. And in fact, I would say that it serves more as a means of demoralizing the general populace. Look, this person or this group of people is trampling all over your whatever, your agency, your autonomy, your personal freedom and liberty, and there's nothing you can do about it. That's the subtle sort of implied message, and when that happens, that has a tendency, I think, to inure people over time. It's death by a thousand cuts. But with Breitbart, it was different. It wasn't that he went on, you know, attacked people necessarily, but he vetted these things, like Barack Obama. Where did that go? Why didn't the people in his entourage make sure that that made it out to the general public? Why do you suppose that is? There was some horsepower there. If Bannon working with Donald Trump to expose evil was such a hurrah kind of thing, where did that all go? If we're so concerned about the ghost of Barack Obama in the White House, where did that all go? Because it was done. The work was done, apparently, in 2012. So, and the things that he had figured out, it was interesting. Like he said, you know, we are the apostates. We are the ex-smokers who are going around saying, you know, we're outraged that you're doing this. Having sort of reverse engineered his American studies degree or whatever it was at Tulane, when he actually went back and read the books, all the cultural Marxists and so forth, he figured it out. And like he said, you know, once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's that holographic image. You can't unsee it. So anyway, we are at war, and the powers and forces that should not be rely on our ignorance, our capitulation, our participation in double-mindedness. I spoke a little bit to that yesterday during Monday with Mitzi. Probably get into that more. The one example, which is a huge example to me, we are so inured, we are so gelded by the perception of things, and it's getting worse and worse. Certain things that we can't say, maybe we should just, you know, throw out the list of taboo words, not to be shocking or provocative or, you know, not to titillate or anything like that, but just because gradually, by degrees, you know, it's Pastor Martin Niemöller. When we couldn't say this word, you know, these people couldn't speak up. No one spoke up for this word or this group who says we shouldn't say these things. And pretty soon, can't say anything. Everything is off limits, and we've come to a point where we self-censor entirely. I don't know. Interesting times, to be sure. Very confusing, very disorienting, generally speaking. Most people don't feel they have their feet on the ground, which is why I try to begin the broadcasts these days, or at least at some point. Yesterday, I think it was like an hour finally. But I usually try to give some reference to the spiritual battle and offer prayer. I think it's having an impact. I have said it. I think it's the most powerful thing we can do on earth. Taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, destroying certain things lifted up against the knowledge of God. As we read about, I mean, what do we got to lose, I guess, is kind of my thought on the matter. Which is interesting when someone says, I shouldn't do that. I mean, what's the point of doing that? Well, why not? What could it hurt? If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But if it works as intended or as advertised, for though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of forces. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised against the knowledge of God. We are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Christ. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
consider this. Dead people see only what they want to see. And frankly, most of us are still dead. Let me give you the lessons of gold and five easy lessons. Number one, don't buy it because you need to make money. You buy gold because you need to protect the money you already have. Don't ever look at the price as a barrier. Look at it as an incentive. Number three, don't buy its paper pretenders. We talked about that a lot. Buy gold. Buy the real thing in the form of coins and bullion. Fourth, don't fall prey to glitzy television or Facebook ads. Do your due diligence instead. And that's what I try to provide you with and have for 26 and a half years on the air and 30 years in this profession. Fifth, don't allow naysayers to divert your interest. Allow yourself the right to protect your interests as you see fit. Jeff Bennett here. One of the ways you can do that is to contact Kettle Moraine Limited. Contact me by calling or texting me at 602-799-8214. 602-799-8214. You can also email me at kettlemoraineltd@cox.net. Let me help you protect your wealth and your family today. Once again, call or text us at 602-799-8214. 8214, or visit our website, SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com. Be glad to help you out. Be glad to answer your questions. That's what we're here for. No pressure, just good, hard, common sense. The decision then becomes up to you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
Welcome back. Telling you, I don't know how things are being manipulated, gamed exactly, but they certainly are. There's no doubt about it. Things that you used to count on being found one place or another get moved around or vanish altogether. I don't think that's an accident. So the prayer, we should do that because, again, if it works, great. And I think it does. I think it is working. And I really do hope and pray that the hypocrisy and double-mindedness in particular is something that goes away. A single-minded person, a single-minded man is a force with which to be reckoned. You start just in simple terms, you know, if we're not automatons, if we're not completely just little carbon cutouts, carbon copies of one another, stuck in this cybernetic box or that cybernetic box, if we really have formed our own tastes, we really do have our own opinions and our own thoughts on things, my goodness, what then? And even better, what if you have the lifeline outside, you know, because again, you and I cannot see what's around the next bend. Again, hence the prayer. All right, so without further ado, particularly Matthew 6 and Ephesians 6, the Lord's Prayer and the full armor. Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors, and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For yours is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen. Lord, please help us to put on the full armor of God. Help us to gird our loins about with truth, put on the breastplate of righteousness, shod our feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. Help us to take up the shield of faith, put on the helmet of salvation, take up the sword of the Spirit. Help us to pray at all times in the Spirit. In Jesus' name, I pray that no weapon formed against the righteous shall prosper, that all who walk in error will come to know the truth in Christ. Please reveal our hypocrisy and double-mindedness. I pray unrepentant evildoers be brought swiftly to justice, wickedness be brought swiftly to an end, righteousness be restored in the land, and poisonous trees and their offshoots, like brands and agencies conceived in malice, would collapse under the weight of their own evil. In Jesus' name, amen. So, you know, ultimately we will give account for ourselves, not for others, not for one another. There are some possible exceptions to that, you know, things, people in particular entrusted to our care. You read chapters like Numbers chapter 30 in the Bible, you know, or when Jesus says, whoever causes one of these little ones of mine to stumble, be better for him that a millstone were hung around his neck and he were cast to the bottom of the sea. Those kinds of things come to mind. But generally, we give account for ourselves. So best we operate in a sober-minded fashion and, you know, acknowledge our own agency, our own autonomy, and the capacity that we have, however big or small. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
Support those that support the network. Support Dixie Republic at DixieRepublic.com. Email ProudSouthern123@gmail.com and let them know that RBN sent you.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few highlights. Extendivite works in keeping my blood pressure in the normal range. I have been using Extendivite for many years. Great product. I use regularly and I rarely get sick. This product has relieved what appeared to be angina pain in my chest and shortness of breath after climbing stairs. I'm quite happy about it. My husband, son, and I have been using this product for a few months now, and we have noticed an improvement in our joints and blood pressure. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
What would you say if I told you we have a new tool that will increase production and lower maintenance costs for your meat processing company, and it would pay for itself in just 6 weeks?
When pigs fly!
The new EaseOff Model EZ4 replaces old spring-style carcass droppers and is faster, safer, and more reliable. The EaseOff lowers or lifts 1,000 pounds to or from your rail automatically using our remote control.
Sounds expensive! Can I afford it?
Can you afford not to try the EaseOff? It installs fast with just 3 bolts in place of your current dropper. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue and injuries, speed up your line, eliminate downtime, and increase profit.
How can I order my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com, EazeOff.com, and hurry, because we are offering $200 off on the new EZ4 for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too. EaseOff LLC, Summersville, Missouri, 417-932-6419.
We know of an ancient radiation that haunts dismembered constellations, a faintly glimmering radio station.
Welcome back.
Flaming truth beyond your
latest. All right, before we get into stuff a little bit, you know, context matters for sure. Probably get into that today. But I think a reminder would be good. Two things. So Jordan Peterson, back in 2018, that interview with Jocko Willink, talking about how a totalitarian state is actually formed. It's, you know, yeah. easy to forget two things. First of all, there are probably more bots, Autobots around us than we think. And if we're not careful, we can be conscripted in a variety of ways that we don't necessarily realize. Anyway, A quick reminder, a brief reminder from Jordan Peterson before we continue on how a totalitarian state is actually formed. Jocko Podcast and Jordan B. Peterson, that clip from 2018. Can we play that, please?
You know, you saw the same thing with Solzhenitsyn's description of the gulags because they were run in large part by the inmates. But I think that that's a really good metaphor for totalitarian states in general, you know, because we like to think that a totalitarian state is made up of innocent, oppressed individuals who are under the thumb of an evil tyrant, and that all of the catastrophes are cascading from the top down. But I don't think that that's true. I think that it's more like a holographic structure where the tyranny exists at every single level. So it exists psychologically, and it exists within the family, and it exists within the mid-level organizations. And so, well, you know, in Eastern Germany, for example, one out of every three people was a government informer. So what that meant is if you had a family of six people, that two of them you couldn't trust. And you can't just say that that's a consequence of the top-down structure. A tyranny is something that exists everywhere simultaneously once it gets a grip. And it's easy for people to say things like, well, I was just following orders. And, you know, I'm not trying to put myself in a position where I'm claiming that if I was in that position, I wouldn't have followed orders in the same way. I mean, God only knows till you get there, right? That's for sure. But what that did to me was focus my attention more and more on the necessity of individual responsibility. I thought if it was individuals in the final analysis who were responsible for the great evils of the 20th century, which I think is a reasonable way of conceptualizing it, then it might be individuals who could be responsible for whatever good there might be in mankind that could help us avoid those situations in the future. And I thought of that as a alternative in some sense to nihilistic disbelief and ideological possession, you know, because if your group identity is too tight, then you start acting like a cog in a mob. That's a very bad thing. But then if your group identity disappears completely, well, then you're left alone and bereft. And so those are bad alternatives, right? You're sort of damned if you do and damned if you don't. And it was very difficult to understand that there might be a third path between those two. I couldn't see the existence of anything because people need belief systems in order to exist, right, to maintain psychological stability and to maintain sociological stability as well. But then if the beliefs get too rigid, then they turn into a raging totalitarian mob. So maybe you let that go because you don't want to play that game, but then you dissolve because you have no identity. That's not acceptable either. When I first laid that out that clearly, it was really hard on me because I couldn't see a third path to that. But then I started to realize, and this was a consequence of reading the sorts of things that we already talked about, but also of starting to understand the underlying structure of mythology and what the heroic path meant, essentially, and that meant adoption of supreme moral responsibility as an individual. Now, there's this idea in the New Testament, which is a really interesting idea. You know, it's one of these bottomless ideas. And I mean that literally. You could study it forever and never get to the bottom of it. And the idea is that Christ is the person who takes the sins of mankind on himself. And there's something redemptive about that. And that's actually a really dark idea, because what it means, as far as I can tell, what it means, at least what it means psychologically, is that when you read these terrible things, you have to understand that you're reading about you. If you don't understand that you're reading about you, then you don't actually understand the stories. You know, because you put yourself in the position where you're automatically the good person who would never do anything like that. And then these other people are, well, they're devils in some sense, right? And it's very easy for people to make that division. But it's a horrific realization when you think that that devil that you see outside is the same thing that's inside, and that you don't know until you're put in a situation like that what you might do. And then it's even worse, because if you look at the historical evidence, you know, It was ordinary people, in some sense, that produced the catastrophes of Nazi Germany and the Soviet Union and Maoist China. I mean, they might not have originated it, but they certainly had the option to say no at different steps along the way, and they didn't, you know. And these things do happen one horrible thing at a time. There's this great book called Ordinary Men, mm-hmm. which describes the descent of of a German police force from ordinary bourgeois middle-class men, essentially, just ordinary policemen, who actually were raised before the Hitler Youth. They weren't indoctrinated, you know, as young people. And they were brought into Poland to sort of mop up after the Germans had walked through. And it describes how they descended into the sort of people who would take naked women out, naked pregnant women out into the middle of fields and shoot them in the back of the head. And what's horrifying about the book is that the author, Browning, details the stages by which this occurred. And it's for example, the commander of this unit told the men that they were going to have to do terrible things, but that they could go home if they wanted to. And then you think, well, there's an out. But then if you really think about it, you think, well, they're a tightly knit quasi-military organization. And one of the natural thoughts under that circumstance would be, well, I'm not going to leave my comrades to do all the dirty work. That would just be a matter of cowardice. And so you can see that, you know, that there's an ethical requirement that would keep you there to begin with. And then they were...
Well, you're doing what you just said, which is taking the burden of this sinful activity on yourself. If you let everyone else do it, then you're not acting heroically.
Well, right. And so it was easy for the men to get entrapped into that. And then, you know, the requirements for their horrific action kept ramping up. And like each time they accepted the requirement of doing one horrific thing, the probability that they would accept the next requirement increased. And what is also really interesting about that book, Ordinary Men, is that it's not like these men didn't suffer. Like, they were suffering terribly. They were physically ill. They were vomiting. They were tearing themselves apart psychologically, you know, but they didn't quit. So that's a great book, because if you want to know how you can be enticed to walk down a terrible path, that's the book to read. And it's very frightening, because if you read it properly, then, you know, you have to read it again, as I said, as if you're one of the people to whom this is happening, not the victim, but the oppressor, you know. And I mean, you can also read it as the victim. That's fair enough. But it's ordinary people who participate in these things. And that's a very, very terrifying thought.
It is a terrifying thought indeed. And just the simple realities, you know, that, I mean, what do we contribute to the evil around us? What agency do we have? There are a lot of biblical passages that we could draw from. Anyway, it's not a top-down structure, but a holographic structure that always makes me think of Frank Kitson's low-intensity operations and that chart. What is it, page 156? I forget. Low-intensity operations. The idea that Christ is the person who takes the sins of mankind on himself. Yeah. He is the one and only propitiation for sins. And that's why things get interesting after the temple goes away. What do? There is no more shedding of blood for the remission of sin. Well, guess what? Jesus Christ already came. And if history says that he came, if he said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, no man cometh unto the Father but by me, well, then either he was crazy or something else going on there. Where is that chart? I want to say page 156, part 2. Chapter 6, there it is, chapter 6, figure 5, diagrammatical representation of a subversive organization in an urban setting. And Frank Kitson, that's page 128 of Frank Kitson's Low Intensity Operations. So just at the end of chapter 6. And you have these three columns, let's say. The far left is the overt, and then you have the increasingly covert going toward the right. And there are white dots and black dots. And so you have A, B, and C columns. Column A is overt political party or movement. B is covert subversive organization. And C, terrorists and saboteurs. And, you know, I would say C is kind of what I mean when I say one foot on either side of the wizard's curtain. So in the notes, Kitson noted, has a four footnotes on the diagrammatical representation of a subversive organization in an urban setting in figure 5. Number one, white circle indicates member of overt committee who is not a member of the subversive organization. They're part of the subversion, but they're not an active participant. They're a useful idiot or a dupe. Number two, black circle indicates member of subversive committee who is also a member of an overt committee. Each black dot in column A represents the same person as one of the black dots in column B. So the black dot in column A is also a member of the covert subversive organization in column B. And three white squares represent members of subversive organization who are not on the overt committee. And finally, number four, there is no relationship between appointments held and the question of whether a man is a member of an overt committee as well as a covert one. So that's interesting. And I think in that sense, this is how this thing, we have so many things that are dead and but they have sort of given life to the dead. It's a dead thing, like corporations. The dead live on in seeming perpetuity and contravention and consternation to the living. And it's this giant illusion, and it works because we give it our consent. So Jordan Peterson mentioned Christopher Browning's Ordinary Men. It's number 7 on his Jordan Peterson's must-read list. He also, the next book, number 8, is The Painted Bird on his list, Jerzy Kosinski's The Painted Bird, which is, I would say, very disturbing. And that's interesting because, I don't know, a couple of reasons. We talked about being there yesterday. Jerzy Kosinski wrote the novel, the 1970 novel that became the 1979 movie starring Peter Sellers, Shirley MacLaine, that my mom Mitzi and I discussed yesterday. But The Painted Bird, as with some other works of Jerzy Kosinski, is widely criticized as plagiarized. And I think that's interesting because I wouldn't necessarily call these kinds of things plagiarized as much as I might look a little deeper. And, speaking of this holographic structure and the spiritual battle that we face, I would actually wonder if it wasn't attributed to automatic writing. Maybe that's the influence that's influencing several authors to write the same kind of works in the same era, or, you know, scientists to do the same kind of research on, you know, in disparate parts of the earth, come into the same, you know, same research, same conclusions. I don't know. That would be, but, you know, this reminds me of the Sagan standard. The Sagan standard is an aphorism that extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, sometimes shortened to ECRI. And we're supposed to leave out all of the things that actually explain and go to reductio ad absurdum sometimes. Maybe I'll explain what I mean by that. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
Health Simple with Colorado Shilji. Fact bit number one. What goes in must come out. Whatever we ingest, breathe in, or transfer by contact must be expelled. Expelled directly as burned calories, through perspiration, respiration, or expelled via urinary and gastric channels. Every element that is not properly used or removed by our bodies become toxins. And toxins, as we know, are causal to every disease and ailment. Toxins are what makes us subpar, unable to be at our best. Be your healthy best by cleansing your body of daily and deeply embedded toxins. Live stronger, and we hope live longer. Shilajit, legit Shilajit that is, like Colorado Shilajit, is perhaps the greatest homeopathic whole body remover of toxins made by Mother Earth.
Look for the gold mountain and medical symbol logo in banners on republicbroadcasting.org to watch the full video and see more information. Use code GORBN when ordering. That's GORBN.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for hemp paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
Tehebo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of the first hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast. So, Larkin, Texas sent me the video it's probably going to be an entire broadcast, so I'm not going to get into it today, I think. But, you know, I mentioned it yesterday. Mark Windows on the Shelley Tasker Show, Steering the Public, Communitarianism. Outstanding. What Jordan Peterson was talking about there, that is exactly what Mark Windows is wrestling through. Talking about, don't be a part of these groups that are, it's all controlled opposition. Whether it starts that way or it ends that way is irrelevant. So, again, speaking of Frank Kitson, I think that's one of the essential pieces that goes into the reading, the counter gang strategy. I think that's essential reading along the lines of what Mark Windows is talking about. You want to be a part of a group. Man, as the bad guys know and say, as they all say, man is a gregarious animal. And that's weaponized and exploited, just like everything else. So what do you do, you know? I think, for me personally, if we just have the courage to, you know, it all, to me, it all comes down to that question. Who's in charge? Who decides? And that informs my discretion in so many ways. It's not just trying in my own life to make sure that I'm always putting God first. And it's so interesting, you know, if the Holy Spirit is my lifeline outside of this sinful, fallen world, my only lifeline, if it was true, Jesus said, it's good that I go, I will send the helper. It's fascinating to me. Speaking of the Sagan standard, supposed to lean on the scientific method, scientific skepticism, Occam's razor, heuristics, which can be gamed, confirmation biases, you know, and so many folks have said similar things along the way, including, you know, influential guys. Thomas Jefferson, you may have heard of him, David Hume, maybe him too, and others. Basically dismissing the supernatural, quote unquote, if it explains. Because, you know, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And so this sets aside everything that I'm talking about in terms of the spiritual battle. So is that ironic? Basically takes you out of the fight and the Holy Spirit, more importantly, in this world. Seems to cut right to the heart of 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and that strong delusion. Why would the restrainer be taken out of the way unless no one is crying out anymore? Romans 11:25, why would there be a fullness of the Gentiles unless there were no more Gentiles being born? Like an arc moment kind of thing. Are the Malthusians trying to engineer such a situation? By golly, it seems they are. Anyway, that'll do it for the first hour. Second hour coming up. Stick around. We'll be right back after this short break.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.